Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business. If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
June's Journey is a fascinating hidden object mystery gaming app where you'll play as June Parker, tasked with a daunting obligation: solve your sister's murder. Set in the 1920s, the era of glitz and glam, this family mystery is one for the ages. Everyone's a suspect until your investigation determines otherwise. The clues are all around you, hidden within tricky twists and turns. You'll collect detailed information about each character in your photo album, where you'll comb over every detail. You can even join a detectives club to chat and play with others or against them in the detectives league. With hundreds of puzzles to solve, you should probably get started today. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with the latest edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, a sit-down with three airline CEOs of three very different airlines: Frontier, Hawaiian, and one you probably haven't heard about, Avelo. Barry Biffle runs Frontier Airlines, and they've been in the news a lot lately. First, because of an announcement a few months back that they'd merge with Spirit. Then the bombshell news that JetBlue wanted Spirit. And then there's the rebound in travel, led by low-cost, low-fare airlines like Frontier, and what all this means for your summer travel. Next, I'll visit with Peter Ingram, the CEO of Hawaiian Airlines. Not only is his airline the most on-time airline in the U.S., he's expanding, especially in the South Pacific. Then, my conversation with Andrew Levy, as his new airline, Avelo, celebrates its first year of operation. If you happen to be flying to or from Burbank, Boise, New Haven, Las Vegas, and a few other cities, you might want to pay attention. First up, Frontier Airlines CEO Barry Biffle.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Barry Biffle, welcome back.
Thanks for having us, Peter.
So let's talk about this. When you and I last spoke, The recovery lead was going to be the leisure sector. It was going to be low-fare carriers. That turned out to be more than true. I mean, that's really what happened.
Leisure travel came back with a vengeance, when we're actually starting to see that in the business travel world now as well.
And when that happened, of course, and I'm not saying it was Frontier, but every airline was doubling down on new routes. If you take a look at what Southwest Airlines added in terms of a route in a given year prior to the pandemic, they might have added one. They ended up 30, right? And next thing you know, you see systems start to melt down where they can't support the schedule, but the demand is there. We have this sort of like inverse relationship now where airlines are cutting capacity in many cases at the very moment that demand is soaring. That's crazy.
It is, but I would just say, in our defense as an industry, yeah. Peter, you and I think first started talking a lot during the beginning of the pandemic, yeah. and we, I know at Frontier, have been kind of ahead of the recovery for a long time. So we flew a lot of empty seats, if you will, kind of anticipating and hoping for a recovery. It is finally coming in, but you're still not quite back to the load factors that we had before. So there's actually just starting to become an equilibrium. So I wouldn't say that demand is outstripping supply yet.
Not yet, but in some markets they couldn't support it.
That is true.
Now, in your situation as an airline, you were ahead of the pack in terms of saying, okay, we're going to start flying to places we've never flown before, right? Especially international.
Yeah, we had been investing in international prior to the pandemic, but yes, we've continued to invest, and we've continued to take delivery of aircraft. And so, yes, we were probably growing more than maybe people would expect it during a pandemic. And this year, we're going to continue to grow. We'll be up 10 to 12% this year. So I think it's versus 2019. So yes, we're continuing to grow. There's a thirst for travel, and so we're looking to continue to expand.
Now, of course, you did not expand to Hawaii. But you expanded a lot in Latin America, expanded a lot in the Caribbean, right? And you're doing, I was talking to one of your guys who, every time I talk to him, where are you? He says, oh, I'm opening another route this week. I'm opening up another route this week, right? All throughout, everywhere short of, I think, Brazil, you were flying.
Yes, our airport organization has been very busy opening new routes, and so they've got quite the cadence and got that down. But yes, we've continued to grow both domestically and near international, and a lot of exciting destinations in the Caribbean, especially. So it's a great time for the growth, and there's more to come.
At the beginning of this year, as demand started to grow, you saw airfares going up at about maybe 7% every month. Then it became 7% every 2 weeks. Then it became 7% every 10 days. I mean, I'll give you an example. My airfare about a month ago from LA to San Francisco, a 38-minute flight round trip was $93. Today it's $410, right? My airfare between New York and LA, a route that I fly at least once every 2 weeks, was $290 about 5 weeks ago. Now it's almost $800. So we're seeing huge increases, and we're not even fully in summer yet. We're not even starting there yet. So where do you see that curve going?
I can't defend what carrier was charging you $290, but that was probably a little too cheap for that length of haul. But I think what you're seeing is you're seeing airfares recover as demand has recovered. I don't think anyone thought that these industry low airfares were going to last. But I would say that if you look on a relative basis, I think overall airfares compared to the other parts of travel, whether it be hotel, car rentals, Uber, your restaurant bill, I would say that if you look book, on balance, we're probably still a smaller percentage of the total travel portfolio. And I think further, I think if you look inflation adjusted, I think they're still not completely out of whack. But in Frontier's case, look, we pride ourselves in having the lowest price option. And all I would tell you is that continue to look at Frontier. While our fares are up marginally because of fuel and other input costs, you can still count on us to have the low fare, and people can travel, especially relative to their income increases, much cheaper than they were even 10 years ago.
But you're still challenged, as is everybody in the industry, because of fuel prices, inflation, the situation in Ukraine, and it all has an impact.
Yeah, so we're America's greenest airline. We use 10 gallons of fuel to move a seat 1,000 miles. You know, there's some other airlines out there, the big airlines, that use 15 gallons. So by saving that fuel, even though fuel's approaching $4 a gallon, you know, we're able to save you, just in that example, $20 each way, just in fuel costs. So yes, we're not immune to increases in fuel, but we dampen that down. And so on a relative basis, I think you can still save with a carrier like Frontier.
Now, there was a story not too long, well, a couple of years ago, actually, you know, about how genius Southwest Airlines was because they hedged their fuel costs. And they were buying it ahead at a lower price. Are you doing any kind of hedging these days, or can you?
So no, we are not hedging today. We've done it in the past. We've studied it extensively, and our conclusion is that the bankers always make money, but you may or may not come out okay. And because the industry overall does not hedge, the pressures on the industry are pretty much flowed through almost immediately. And because we actually burn so much less fuel, we kind of have an embedded hedge. So the pressure on the broader industry is greater than us. So we feel very comfortable with our position with it.
Now, a couple of months ago, I know you can't talk too much about this, but a couple of months ago, you guys made front page news with the announcement of Spirit and Frontier. I don't even want to call it a merger. One was going to buy the other, but the point is you were getting together. And then, completely out of left field, just a couple of weeks ago, was a bigger front page story that JetBlue is now making an offer for Spirit. Just a few days ago, Spirit's board said not interested in the JetBlue offer, so you guys are back on the table again.
Yeah, so look, we're pleased with the Spirit's board's decision, but you know, as we've said from the beginning, we think this is great for consumers. It's going to save consumers $1 billion a year in the combined airlines.
Well, you fly the same planes.
That gets to why the it makes so much more sense than anything else out there. Not only do we fly the same planes, but we have very similar business models, very similar cultures. And so it's really good for our employees, it's great for our shareholders, and it's really great for consumers.
I mean, if you really go down the list, your spare parts inventory becomes interesting at that point. Your pilot training.
There's a lot of ways for us to become even more efficient, and that should benefit consumers.
And do you really overlap on that many routes?
No, it's not significant overlap, and in fact, I think you know, as you've seen and we've demonstrated, what's really important is what we can do together and provide meaningful competition to the Big Four.
Exactly, and then, you know, assuming this happens and assumes it clears all the regulatory hurdles, do you have a timetable in mind?
We have said from the beginning we believe that this can close by the end of the year.
Okay, and then you become then a low-fare juggernaut.
We believe that we, I don't know about juggernaut's the right word, but look, we
you'd accept that word, come on.
Yeah, we believe in the merits of the deal, and we're just excited about what it can do for consumers and our employees. I think it'd be a great time because it would give us the ability to have real depth in a lot of cities that, you know, will take us a decade to grow on our own to that size.
You know, there was a point not too long ago, and I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, but you would say, okay, there's no more consolidation coming in the airline business. All the big mergers have happened, you know, the swallowing has gone on, whether it was Alaska taking over Virgin America or other smaller carriers. Are we done with it now?
Look, I can't speculate about other deals. I just know we're excited about the one that we have on the table.
Even though we can't talk about it, the proposed merger or consolidation between Frontier and Spirit is back on the table. We'll have to see what happens. You just announced in Denver that you're going to save X number of minutes in terms of your operations by saying, you know what? We don't need your stinking jetways. We're going to have passengers go downstairs and go up portable stairs on both the front and the back of the plane. So two entrance points. Do you really think you're going to save a lot of time doing that?
We think we're going to save time, and we think we're going to deliver a better experience, Peter. The facts are that if you look in, whether it be Latin America or in Europe, take Europe, for example, you take Ryanair, EasyJet, you know, there, even a lot of the legacies, the ground loading is very, very common. And it's very simple. If, what is the fastest way on and off a plane? Use more than one entrance and more than one exit. And so boarding from the front and the rear just gives you a lot more options. And there's nothing more frustrating than being on row 30 when you pull up and you're the last one to get off. So and it just seems that 5 minutes seems like an eternity. So you eliminate that.
Oh, by the way, it is an eternity.
It is an eternity. And it's just one of those psychological things. So what we figured out is people really like it. There's also that component of I've been inside an airplane, you know, just that breath of fresh air for a moment before I go into the terminal, or one less breath of fresh air before I get on the plane. Same thing. So it's actually a better experience. And for the naysayers, most likely they get out to the parking lot and they're in open air that, you know, couple of minutes as well. So it's a better experience. But yes, it's also going to enable us to run a safer operation because, quite candidly, the jet bridges tear up more doors than you can imagine. There's always damage with them. And it's just one more component that can break. And it's much faster and cleaner to operate the aircraft. So you save money, yeah. And it's safer, and it's better experience.
Well, I'll give you another scenario. I'm gonna give this idea a chance here. Let's say everything goes right. It's a beautiful day. You board 5 minutes early. You're on a brand new plane. It even has that brand new plane smell. You're sitting on the plane. The pilot's happy to see you. The flight attendants are great. The food's delightful. You get in the air. There's no turbulence. Everything is wonderful. The seat's open next to you. And then the pilot makes an announcement, which even makes the day even better. Will the flight attendants please prepare for an early arrival? This is your day. And then you land, and there's no jetway available. So to me, that's another reason why your idea might work. Because at every airport, unless I'm crazy, there are penalty boxes where planes can park outside of the jetways where you can unload and offload passengers. I couldn't understand for the life of me why we'd have to wait on a jetway to get people off the plane.
Well, you're absolutely right, Peter. And so, I mean, since you went there,
yes, I did go there.
There's more than just, you know, what I just described a moment ago. So, it's cheaper and easier to pour concrete than it is to actually build jet bridges. So, if you want to get to the most efficient and the most flexible for customers, is actually to have the ability to do what's called power in and power out. So you don't even, you know, connect to a tug on the ground, and you literally pull up, park, and you can get off. And it's a lot easier. Well, it takes a little more real estate. It doesn't work maybe in LaGuardia, but most places where you have plenty of real estate, you can have a lot more parking positions. So you don't have that situation where you're waiting for a gate that just happens over and over and over. And even if you're a little bit slow getting one of the two, you're going to have one of the two air stairs showing up. So that frustration that people have when you get there, and there's nothing worse than being early even, and yet you're waiting for a gate. So you eliminate a lot of that.
That at almost every one of your stations?
So we're starting in Denver. We're talking to several major airports about it. We went through a phase in this country of jet bridge. And in fact, they even did it with a lot of the regional aircraft. So we're trying to undo a lot of that. But I think as people figure out how much more useful it is, and quite honestly, it's less capital intensive for the airport. So it's a great way for them to expand. And grow without a lot of capital and a better experience. So we've got a lot of airports that are really interested in adding our next kind of levels of growth through this mechanism.
Now, for most planes, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you pull up to a gate, right, you shut the engines down and somebody plugs in external power. If you're parked 100 feet out, can they still plug in the external power?
So you can have portable GPU units. You can also have in the ground. So just because it's away from the terminal, you can even have fuel pits as well as power from the ground. But most of them, we're looking at a variety of carts. But initially, you'll use a little more of our APUs for air and power. But again, it's
that means the auxiliary power unit.
The auxiliary power unit, which is in there, so you can shut off the main engines. Look, overall, the total combination, like I said, is going to be more efficient and provide a better experience.
I remember a story that came out of Africa a couple of years ago where they overbooked the plane by 30 people, and they were boarding using the portable stairs on the outside, and a riot was breaking out. The military shows up, orders everybody off the plane and lines them up under the wing and say, okay, here's the deal. When I shoot my gun, you run around the plane three times, then you can board. Whoever boards first gets a seat. And guess what? It worked. And they, other 30 people didn't make the plane. You don't like that idea, I don't think. No.
That wouldn't be fair, if you know. But yeah, I guess the ones that in the most physical shape, I guess, got on first.
Exactly. Well, listen, then the plane flies out lighter, you save more fuel. How do you think?
I don't know if consumers would like that.
No, I don't think so either. But I had to share the story.
It's a great story.
It's a true story. My thanks to Barry. Hawaiian Airlines has quite a history. And from an operational point of view, the airline seems to work quite well. It boasts the best on-time performance of any U.S. airline, not just this year, but for many years running. And it's not just flying to Hawaii, but beyond, to Australia, Japan, even American Samoa. And not to mention flying from Hawaii to Los Angeles, New York, Las Vegas, even Austin, Texas, just to name a few routes. And CEO Peter Ingram is even adding a few places.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Peter, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
So, you know, Hawaii was, let's put this in perspective, the most restricted state during COVID. As an island state, you were completely shut off and shut down. If you wanted to come, you had to perform some serious quarantining and testing and multiple testing and then testing again. And at a point where you had some counties not talking to other counties, and you know, Maui doing things that Honolulu wasn't doing, and yet now that you're open, you're really open. I mean, no mask restrictions now, no testing, no quarantining, and I'm sure that's reflected in your airlift.
Absolutely. I mean, we've come a long way from the trough, and as you say, from the end of March 2020 until the 15th of October, it was almost impossible to travel here. We had a hard 10-day quarantine for anyone who came in. No real exceptions. That was pre-vaccine period. We saw recovery before now. Things have, started to come back with the Safe Travels program that came in October of 2020.
I remember wearing my wristband, yes.
Yes, I wore the wristband a lot of times myself, actually. And then as we moved into 2021, with the ability to qualify for the quarantine exemption with as long as you had been vaccinated, that allowed us to have a pretty decent summer for the domestic market last year. We went up and down a little bit the back half of last year as the Delta variant wave and then later the Omicron wave came through. But right now, I'm really encouraged. I'm seeing bookings very strong. People really do want to travel. If anything, I think the pandemic made us appreciate how much we like getting out and seeing nature, interacting with other people, with new places. And Hawaii, I think,
it's
is
sort like
the
got that
top
baked
of that
in
list for everyone.
It's got it baked in.
Yeah.
But then, of course, there were some airlines during the pandemic. I'm reminded of Qatar, for example. They completely pivoted and became a cargo carrier, and they were ripping out seats and putting in pallets in the old passenger compartment. Were you able to do some cargo flights?
We were doing things like that. We had all cargo flights coming from Seoul, South Korea, here into Hawaii. We had some flights that we did direct to the U.S. mainland. We did a number of charters for the U.S. military, a business that Hawaiian was in decades ago that hadn't been a core part of our business. It certainly wasn't replacing the revenue we lost from the passenger business. Right. But at a time when we had idle airplanes and idle assets, it was a chance for us to go and chase some revenue, and our team got very creative and went after it.
What was the craziest cargo you took?
Oh, I think there was, one notable one we had was a very complicated charter to organize into Shenzhen, China, and we brought back I think it was 1.6 million face coverings right at the beginning of masks being required or recommended. It was a charter we did for a charity group that had organized masks to come in here to Hawaii.
You know, I go back to the days when the old days of South Pacific International Airlines, SPIA, when they were flying down to American Samoa and the old 707s. You have that route system even today, right? You're still flying.
American Samoa has been part of our network for, I think, going on 35 years now. We have restarted that now. American Samoa had an even harder, more restrictive quarantine restriction than Hawaii, and we had suspended service for a while. We're flying on a limited basis now, working closely with the government, but that's an important part of our network. It's an extended part of our Pacific Island family.
I mean, the last time you and I spoke, you know, and many of my listeners might not even be aware of this. I mean, your route network extends to New Zealand. You're down in Australia. You're in Japan. You mentioned Korea, right? That's been going on for quite some time.
It has. And New Zealand is one where we had a little bit of a news announcement this week. We haven't flown there since the middle of March 2020. We're resuming that service three times a week starting in the first week of July. So we're excited to get back to New Zealand. We started Sydney back up again after a hiatus in December of last year. We are flying to Korea. That service is going to be accelerating now that they're reducing some of their restrictions. And Japan is the biggest part of our international network.
Of course, always has been.
That's the one piece that's not all the way back yet. There's still a number of restrictions, and there's some hard cap limitations on the number of people who can enter Japan internationally each day, and that's constraining us a bit. But I think the demand there is as pent up as it is everywhere else, and we're going to see a robust recovery when those restrictions get lifted.
I mean, when you take a look at the whole South Pacific market, these are island nations that without airlift, there goes their economy.
Well, I think when you live on the mainland, that is something that people don't have an appreciation for, is how essential air transportation is. And you look at Hawaiian Airlines, we've been in operations for 92 years. The core of our business initially, and still a main foundational piece of our business, is just flying between the islands of the state.
Right.
And, you know, there are no surface transportation options on a regular basis. There's certainly no roads, no trains. It is more complicated than you would think to try and travel on a boat between the islands.
Well, there's no real ferry service. I think maybe out of Lanai, maybe once a day or something.
Yeah, there's service from Lanai connecting to Maui, but really right. Getting, you know, on the 100 to 250 mile flights that we fly, we carry millions of passengers each year, and it is people traveling for mundane reasons that if you live on the mainland United States, you would think about, well, I'm going to do that in my car. In here, people come to the airport and they get on a Hawaiian Airlines plane, and we see many of the same construction workers and medical employees on a very regular basis.
You know, when you think of inter-island travel, of course, I go back to the days where you had Hawaiian, you had Aloha, you had a couple of smaller carriers that came and went almost before you could pronounce their names.
Yeah, there was Mid-Pacific was one
right.
of the ones.
Right, and now you have Mokulele?
Mokulele.
Yeah. But Aloha has been gone for a while, right?
Aloha has been gone since 2008.
I know. And now you have Southwest coming in. So now you're probably your biggest competitor inter-island.
Yeah, they're the largest competitor to us. We're still far and away the largest carrier between the islands, and as I said, we've been doing this for 92 years, and it's core to what we do. It's not a peripheral business for us. This is something that that we intend to be doing for the next 92 years.
And the aircraft that you're using in those flights Are those the old MD-80s or the 717s? Or
these are the Boeing 717s, yeah. Which was was originally the MD-95
exactly.
Before Boeing bought McDonnell Douglas. It's actually a fantastic airplane for that mission, because McDonnell Douglas, as you know, you're someone who is familiar with airplanes, that they were noted for making really durable aircraft. And when you're putting 15, 16 cycles a day on an airplane because you're flying 30-minute hops.
By the way, a cycle is a takeoff and a landing. I'm just letting everybody know, yeah.
Yeah, when you're putting that many takeoffs and landings on an airplane, it's a lot of wear and tear. And those airplanes have been fantastic. We've been flying them since 2001, and there's not a better aircraft out there for that mission.
So you basically have a two airplane fleet. Right, I mean, you have 717s, and you've got the A330s.
We've also got A321neos that we began flying in 2017. So we've got a fleet of 18 neos, which are fantastic aircraft for Hawaii to the West Coast service. Really, it's by far the most fuel efficient airplane out there for that mission.
You know, all the lessons that were learned during COVID operationally is on one level. Then there's customer service operational levels that you had to learn as well. I mean, you know, one of the biggest complaints that were actually out there industry wide, not about your airline, you know, refunds or call waiting times on trying to get customer service. And we all know the staffing shortages are industry wide. How have you adjusted to all of that?
Well, I think if there was one word to describe it, we've had to become more nimble, and it has presented a lot of challenges. You talked about call waiting times. One of the challenges is you build staffing models that are predicated on
past models,
yeah. And a lot of people using the website to transact with us. But
until
now
something
we've
goes
got,
wrong, yeah.
We've got millions and millions of dollars of people who have vouchers from trips that they weren't able to take in 2020. Some of those need to be processed manually. That puts a lot of strain on the call center, and so it is a lot of what we've done has been disrupted. We're used to making schedules that you put out there 6 months in advance.
You can't do that anymore.
They don't change very much, and we've had to become a lot more dynamic.
I mean, it's one thing to update your fares 200,000 times a day, but now you're updating your schedule 200,000 times a day. That
exactly.
never used to happen.
Yeah.
You know, the surprise airfare that I saw just this week came out of Southwest, and what it was is this, and I'm going to speak to you as a fellow passenger. If I buy a ticket in my name, and for whatever reason, I can't use the ticket. 3 years ago, there may have been draconian ticket change fees. Well, that's changed now. United led the way with that. So now you get a credit, right, which you can then use up to about a year. But up until now, you could only use it in your name, right? So if I didn't take the flight and Peter Greenberg couldn't go, I couldn't give it to Peter Ingram. Southwest Airlines just announced a fare this week that says, by the way, they're pricing it a little bit higher than their regular economy fare. But it gives you the option that if you can't go and there's a credit in your account, I can give it to you. What do you think about that?
Well, I think one of the things, I'll just talk about it from our perspective at Hawaiian Airlines and refer to that a little more generally. I think we have taken a step back as we restarted travel again and said, what are some of the things that we can do to be a better airline for our guests? One of the things we did, and we weren't the first to do this, but we made our Hawaiian miles never expire.
I heard that on the plane. Yep.
We eliminated change fees, and I think it has helped freshen our perspective around. Let's think of some of the impediments we have to people having a great experience with us, and sometimes those experiments. Those impediments are, there's a business reason for it, but maybe it's not as good a business reason as we always thought. And should we rethink and break some of those paradigms? And the disruption of the last 2 years was a time when paradigms got broken. So I think we're a little more open to thinking about those things.
You know, the complaints that we're getting from our listeners, and that won't come as a surprise to you, you know, people had weddings or family reunions or conventions and stuff that, of course, either got postponed or canceled. They already bought the flight. The wedding's over. The family reunion's not going to happen again, and they're stuck with a ticket that they don't think they can use, even though if it's a credit. Then what do they do?
Yeah. One of the things we've tried to do is make sure we give people as many opportunities as possible to take advantage of those. So we have a couple of times extended The validity period of vouchers, so that people have more of an opportunity to plan that next trip.
I mean, I have to laugh. I get an email every once in a while telling me how many credits I have. I'm like going, oh my God, I'm never going to be, how do I do it, right? And because there were a lot of flights I didn't take, you know?
I think that just means that you're going to have to make another trip out to here to Hawaii soon.
Nice segue, Peter. But in terms of your route network, right, are there places now that you're going to fly to that you weren't going to fly to before, or places now that you're not going to fly to that you did fly to before?
Well, we actually somewhat remarkably added some new routes to our network in the middle of the pandemic. So, you know, over a period of about 6 or 8 weeks last year, we added flight between Honolulu and Ontario, California. We added a nonstop flight between Honolulu and Austin. We connected Honolulu and Orlando, and we added a Long Beach, Maui flight. So,
is Honolulu, Orlando your longest flight?
Our longest flight is Honolulu to Boston.
Let's see.
The longest domestic flight in the United States, actually.
Really?
Ahead of number two, which is Hawaiian Airlines Honolulu JFK.
Well, that brings up the next thing. People may not know this, and it may come as a surprise to you, and you'll tell me how many years in a row this has happened, but Hawaiian Airlines consistently scores as the number one on-time punctual airline in America.
Yeah, it's something we take a lot of pride in. And one of the things, you know, people might say is, well, you know, it's blue skies and sunshine all the time. And there's an element of truth to that. But it's also true that when you're flying quick turns on 30-minute flights on our Neighbor Island network, it really takes a team working together. And our folks take a lot of pride on it, and they do a great job. We have the finest aviation professionals in the world working for our company, and they take a lot of pride in delivering outstanding service.
Well, for what it's worth, on my flight from Maui here today, we pushed back 4 minutes early, and we landed 10 minutes early.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that never happens.
That is absolutely set up so the next flight can be on time, too.
No,
so
it warms my heart. The bar is high now. The bar is high. My thanks to Peter. Chances are you haven't heard of Andrew Levy or his airline, Avelo. But Levy has some airline experience. Prior to starting this one-year-old airline, he was president of Allegiant Air and formerly was chief financial officer at United. So he knows the numbers. And he's now flying Avelo between underserved cities in the U.S. on nonstop flights that don't go through major airport hubs. Andrew, first of all, happy anniversary. You just celebrated your first year flying.
Thank you, Peter. It's amazing. It's exciting, but I can't believe how quickly it's gone by.
You know, when you first started, you know, I remember the flights you had going out of Burbank up the Pacific Northwest. You had a pretty ambitious route system. Some of them made it. Some of them didn't. You added some new ones in the process. I guess the first question I have to ask is, how was it operating an airline in the middle of the pandemic?
Well, you know, I think our timing could have been better. I'll give you that. It was challenging. I mean, look, starting a new airline with a new brand and trying to build awareness is obviously a challenge under any circumstance. But what certainly made it more challenging was being in the pandemic, of course, which we knew when we started. But what we didn't anticipate, although, you know, not surprising, but, you know, Delta, that variant hit us really hard in the middle of July, just as things were really starting to build momentum at a really peak time of year. And so that really kind of knocked us back a little bit. And then, of course, you know, then we start to get to something that looks more normal in October, November, and then next thing you know, we get hit with Omicron. So that set us back a little bit. But you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's kind of how I view where we are. We're in a good spot now. You know, obviously the pandemic, I'm not sure anybody's declared it to be over just yet, but certainly we hope that the worst is behind us. And we are, I think we're in a good position right now and really excited to start up our second year of operation.
Well, as you're starting at the second year, why don't you educate me and our audience as to where you're actually flying?
Well, so Peter, you know, a year ago, as you noted, we started out in Burbank. That is still our West Coast operation centered around LA's best airport, Burbank, a wonderful airport right in the heart of LA County. And we serve a number of markets in the Western U.S. Most of the ones that we were serving last year when we spoke are still there. And we've added quite a few. And there's a couple more that are just about to start with service to Boise, Idaho, and Spokane, Washington, with nonstop service to Boise, or excuse me, to Burbank. But what we did shortly after we started Burbank is we finished up a deal to open up a new base at Tweed Airport in New Haven, Connecticut. So we started that in early November, and we have now six airplanes flying around in that part of the world. We're going from Tweed down to various points in Florida, the Carolinas, Savannah, Georgia, Nashville. And just in a few short weeks, we're going to be starting service to Baltimore, Washington International Airport, Chicago Midway, as well as Raleigh-Durham. So we're really excited about both coasts and how they're performing, and very excited about, like I mentioned before, just the second year of operations. We have a lot that we're excited about doing, and a lot of growth still to come.
You know, you talk about how the travel business is going to be led by the leisure sector. That certainly qualifies for you. We saw one of your competitors, a longstanding veteran, David Neilman, start Breeze with almost the same sort of philosophy of flying between two cities that weren't necessarily connected through a hub, where you were taking your targets, I guess, were underserved airports that needed to go to other underserved airports, and then becoming the dominant carrier in that market. Am I sort of right on the track there?
Well, it certainly seems like that's what they're doing over there. And look, David's been around a long time, just as I have. And I think that we all know that that the best way to get going in this business as a new entrant is to find opportunities out there that others aren't serving. And certainly we did that for 14 years when I was at Allegiant, going into new markets that nobody else served. And that served Allegiant very well while I was there, and continues to serve them quite well. We're doing a lot of the same things, just trying to do something that others aren't doing, offering consumers choice, low fares, a highly reliable product, and with really friendly crew members. So we've got a winning combination. And we're certainly excited about what we're doing, and we expect to do a lot more of it as we move on.
One of your strategies, and I think it also applies to what you did at Allegiant, is frequency. You're not flying Boise to Burbank four times a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, that's a good way to lose a lot of money quickly, if we were to do something like that. And the reason I say that is, look, we're just starting, and to me, you have to mitigate your risk. And so you got to spread yourself out. You got to have a little bit of frequency in a lot of different places. As you noted, we are a leisure-oriented carrier. We are not going to be your businessman's airline, so to speak. That's just not what we're structured to do. And quite honestly, if we tried to do that, we would fail because we're too new. We're too small. We have a brand that no one knows. And so you can't get to the level of frequency without having the awareness. And you can't really carry those customers without that level of frequency. So, we'll see how things develop over time. We typically start off routes with anywhere from 2 to 4 trips a week. There's exceptions there. We're certainly doing a bit more in the East Coast, where we found very big markets. So, Tweed, which is really serving Connecticut and predominantly Southern Connecticut, that's a unique opportunity to fly into really big markets in Florida and in the Carolinas and elsewhere, as I mentioned. We're going to be starting soon. And so we're going to big markets there and taking people who have been really kind of been on this island where it was really hard for them to get away. They were just used to driving a really long distance to LaGuardia or JFK or White Plains, and now we've offered just this phenomenal convenient service offering. And in that case, we've been able to add more frequency quickly. In the West, we're going into some smaller markets. And really, again, we're trying to do things that others aren't doing. So for us to go, let's say, Burbank, Vegas is an example. Well, Southwest does a lot of that, so we can't really add anything unique to that market. But when we look at markets like a Boise, where there was no nonstop service when we announced, there is some new response from Alaska Airlines. So they've added a few trips a week in there. But you know, whether it's Santa Rosa, which is the same scenario, there was no nonstop service in the Burbank, Medford, Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, et cetera, et cetera. You know, everything we do, we're the first ones to do it. And that's really the business model. We want to offer choice. Now, it needs to be a market we think can work. There has to be enough interest and flying between those two points. But, you know, people like going to Southern California, and people in Southern California like going to the places that we serve in the Western U.S. And so that is, you know, we feel great about that. And certainly up in the Northeast, people really like flying south, especially in the wintertime. We've seen that over the past few months as we've performed very, very well with our flights to Florida. And we're excited to start offering some destination markets that are a little bit more popular as things get a little warmer in Florida. You know, people want to go down to Myrtle Beach and Savannah and Charleston. And we'll be, you know, adding those. Those will start up in just the next couple of days here. So we're excited about where we are. And we have a very, very optimistic view of the future for Avelo.
Of course, you know, the interesting thing is, going back historically, you got to stay true to your brand definition. You know, the thing that ended Freddie Laker was when he put a first class section in. And the thing that ended MGM Grand was when they put a coach section in. You have to be who you are.
Yep.
Now, the other question for you.
I think that's true.
Yeah. The other question for you is, of course, the intangible of fuel. You know, every airline knows this. You've known it because you've been in the business so long. You can't, you know, those two intangibles of labor and fuel. When you started out, you had $29 fares. Do you still have $29 fares?
You know, we actually started out with $19 average fares.
Excuse me.
I'm kind of shaking when I say, I'm shaking a little bit when I say that, because I never want to see a $19 fare ever again. No, we don't have fares that low anymore, Peter, and we really can't afford to. I mean, you know, those were always kind of, hey, gotcha. Let's kind of capture your eyeballs and introduce ourselves to the world. Obviously, we're a low fare airline, and we live off of volume. We need to fill up airplanes, and to fill up airplanes, you need to offer compelling value to consumers. That's what gets them to get on our airplanes.
We're out of time, but I just want to say I look forward to your second anniversary. Congratulations again, and I'll see you up there in some of those new airports. I'll try to fly Boise to Burbank. My thanks to Andrew, to Peter Ingram, and to Barry Biffle. And my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the travel news, and it's ramping up, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Ion Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcast.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.